This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety.
Sit back, relax, and take a ride with us on the Gunblog Variety Cast, episode 68.
Welcome back to the Gunblog Variety Cast. I'm your host, Sean from NC Gunblog, and with me today is Adam from Guns, Cars, Tech Blog. How are you doing, Adam?
It's starting to get to be 40 below when I walk the dog in the morning, so I got that going for me.
I'm pretty sure it's not 40 below.
I mean below 40. That's what I mean.
Yeah. If it ever got 40 below in Nashville, I think the world would come to an end.
If it was 40 below in Nashville, all the global warming. Jeez.
Oh, let's get started with a tactical dog and fitness report. 23.4 dog walking miles, and I did a weigh-in December 1st. That was Tuesday, and I'm down 18 pounds since I started on the meds and the diet November the 3rd.
Is that okay?
In a month, 18 pounds. Yes, that's not bad.
Okay.
It's a little bit more than I expected and pretty much more than everybody else expected too, but I mean, I'm not really in any danger. I'm, you know, taking a multivitamin. I'm not doing anything unsafe.
Okay.
And I'm under doctor's care. The first month is over, and the weird, stupid brain effects seem to be done. In fact, kind of funny story. I went to a location that I had been to on day number 3.
Yeah.
And they're, oh, look, you seem so much better now. I'm like, yeah, actually I am. I have chosen a gym, and it looks like sometime next week I will start with a gym sometime after payday, and they have a spin class and a pool.
And then, just as you get settled, that's when everybody shows up after New Year's.
Oh, I'm not worried about that. I can ignore those idiots. I'll be coming in at weird times because of the way my job is structured. I'll be coming in for the spin class during the spin class. And from what I know about spin classes, either you like them or you don't, and they beat you to death, and people don't like them, so they don't come. And I like riding a bike, so.
Yeah.
And they won't survive, and I will.
I can take it.
Yeah, and I'll come in at weird hours to swim in the pool, so I won't worry about them.
All right. Tactical dog turned 5 on Monday. She's 5 years old. Much calmer now than she was when she was 2, or less than 2. There's like a switch that flips at 2, right? And they go from 180% to 160%, just like all the time. And then about the time they turn 4, they're down to about 100% of crazy dog all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so now she's just kind of, we've beaten her into submission.
Well, now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the gun blogosphere, Aaron Paulette. Aaron's going to talk about zones of assessment.
Come on, every pony. It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Aaron Paulette.
Zones of assessment? What are those?
They are a technique for determining what you have, and therefore what you need, in an emergency situation. I can't claim credit for the idea. The original zones of assessment were invented by Les Stroud, the Survivor Man. What I did do, though, is adapt them for preparedness. Longtime readers of my blog may remember that my Zones of Assessment series was one of the first articles I wrote for Blue Collar Prepping, and there are links to that in the show notes. What I'm going to do in this segment is to briefly explain what these zones are, how they work, and how to apply them to an emergency situation such as Paris or San Bernardino. Zone 1 is your everyday carry. These are the things which you carry on your body and therefore have control over and immediate access to. Clothing is a good example of Zone 1. It protects you from the elements, and it helps you blend in or stand out as necessary. You need to be aware of what you're wearing. If you went to a concert wearing a surplus camouflage jacket and people in paramilitary uniforms start shooting the place up, after you've gotten to safety, you should consider taking that jacket off so you look more like a civilian to any authorities. Cell phones are great Zone 1 items, and nearly everybody has one. You can use them to call for help, or turn them into flashlights to navigate through dark areas, or check GPS to find your way out of a riot zone. Just make sure that you don't put yourself into more danger by stopping to check your phone. Pocket knives and carry pistols are, of course, Zone 1 by being everyday carry, and their utility in an emergency is obvious. And any good prepper should have some kind of first aid or boo-boo kit on their person. Zone 2 is anything you can get to within a few steps. And by steps, I mean procedural, not distance. Anything you can carry in a purse or a backpack is Zone 2, because in order to get that gear, you need to open the bag, reach inside it, and rummage around for what you want. You don't have immediate access and control to anything inside, and that container can be taken or lost rather easily. The classic example of Zone 2 is anything a woman carries in her purse, especially if she sets it down. Your average high school or college student's book bag also applies. The drawback to Zone 2 items is that while they are useful, they are frequently bulky, heavy, or generally inconvenient to have on you, because otherwise you'd be wearing them. These are things like lunches, bottles of water, actual first aid kits instead of just band-aids, and basically anything you keep in your car. In fact, if your car is nearby, it basically becomes a giant Zone 2 bag. Essentially, Zone 2 items are things that you use once your life is not in immediate danger. They are great to have if you're caught in a storm or lost in the woods, but in an active shooter situation, they aren't much use to you. In fact, the added bulk might slow you down. So unless there's something in that zone which you really need right now, you might be better off just abandoning it. Zone 3 is what you can get from the environment. And because it doesn't contain anything which is in your possession, it's the most abstract of all the zones. It's what happens to be around you at the time. Now, situational awareness is critical to effectively utilize this zone. After all, you need to notice where the fire exits are before you can use them. And since living through an active shooter scenario also requires situational awareness, Zone 3 is likely going to be your biggest help in reaching safety. Tangible things which you pull from the environment can help. Fire extinguishers can blind or choke attackers. Fire axes can be used as weapons or to break through obstacles between you and safety. Furniture can provide concealment and possibly cover if thick enough. Now, speaking of cover, despite what Hollywood tells you, car doors are not cover. If you want to put a car between you and bullets, take shelter behind the engine block by crouching down behind the wheels. The mass of the engine ought to stop most bullets, and the tires will prevent your feet and legs from being seen and therefore from being targets. However, the best Zone 3 items are other people, especially if you already know and trust them. In a perfect world, these other people would already have their Zone 1 items packed or ready to go, and at that point in the emergency, you cease being a mob and you start to work together as a team. So, cultivate friendships with smart, trustworthy people and train your family in the ways of preparedness. That way, if disaster does strike, you can react as a coordinated unit rather than as a collection of individuals. And finally, resist herd mentality. In a terror attack, people are going to be panicking. If you can retain a level head and act with reason instead of reacting from fear, you will be better able to determine if moving with the crowd is a good thing or a bad thing. Because sometimes the herd will lead you to the safety of fire exits, and other times it will lead you to a dead end.
All right, Aaron. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
If you'd like to read more from Aaron, check out her blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com.
Felons behaving badly. Man assaults handicapped woman, steals car in Raleigh. A man is in custody in Raleigh after he tried to murder a handicapped woman and stole her car on Thanksgiving morning. Police said on the morning of November 26, suspect, 37, broke into the victim's house in the 4800 block of Walden Court. Authorities said the victim, 68, had befriended suspect. She woke up to find him standing over her bed, police said. Suspect reportedly choked victim, physically assaulted her with his hands and feet, and stole her credit card. Police said suspect eventually fled in the victim's car. Shortly before 1 p.m. on December 3rd, suspect turned himself in to the Raleigh police. So, what sort of person befriends a 68-year-old woman, then breaks into her house Thanksgiving morning, chokes her, physically assaults her with his hands and feet, steals her credit card, and flees in her car?
You know, you're just your normal, kind of everyday office worker guy.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Cheat property services, felon class H. Common law robbery, felon class H. DWI, misdemeanor non-class code. 2 counts of felony breaking and entering, felon class H. 4 counts of financial card fraud, felon class I. 4 counts of financial card fraud attempted, felon class I. Forgery, felon class I. Uttering forged paper instruments, felon class F. Hit and run, misdemeanor class 1. 3 counts of larceny, felon class H. 1 count of misdemeanor larceny, misdemeanor class 1. Possess controlled substance attempted, misdemeanor class 1. Possess schedule 6, misdemeanor class 1. Possess schedule 6 attempted, misdemeanor class 1. 2 counts of resisting officer, misdemeanor class 2. Resisting officer attempted, misdemeanor class 1. 2 counts unauthorized use of motor conveyance, misdemeanor class 1. And wanton injury to persons or property greater than $200, misdemeanor class 1. For more details, see his published works.
That was cute. I like that touch. That was cute.
Dates and times at the link in the show notes. So 37 years old and he has, wow, I can't even count all that.
Yeah, it's a lot. I got to take off my shoes to count all that.
Well, there's a certain point where you just say, you know what? You've had all the chances you're getting when it's not letting you out anymore.
Well, but that's mean.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
But that's mean. And we can't be mean.
Sure we can.
No, he just needs a safe space.
You know, I think actually in this case, the person who needed the safe space was the 68-year-old woman who was getting choked and beaten and her credit card and her vehicle stolen.
No, she just needed to get her privilege checked. That's what she needed.
This week on Foreign Policy for Grownups, Nikki answers that burning question about Russia, Iraq, foreign policy in general. Was Romney right? Nikki, recently Republicans have been bragging that Mitt Romney has been vindicated in his foreign policy points that he made during the 2012 campaign, but they seem to be painting him as some kind of prophet. Was he really so visionary?
I don't know about visionary. I think anyone with a somewhat cursory knowledge of foreign affairs knew what was going on. Romney did project that Russia would become a much bigger threat and that Putin was, in fact, a threat to peace. Romney did insist that radical Islam was spreading, and he did say Iraq was in danger of falling without American troops there to keep the peace and stabilize the country. But you know what? So did many of my friends in the military. I know a lot of folks who were deployed to Iraq more than once who said they felt like the job wasn't finished there, and that they feared that Iraq would fall into bedlam as soon as they left the AO. I guess what I have to wonder about is how the current administration didn't see it. It's not like Russia ever stopped viewing NATO and the US as a national security threat. Sure, the attitude softened a bit in the 2000s, but it's tough to see how the current administration didn't see the writing on the wall. Relations with NATO remained difficult during the first Putin years. To start with, Moscow always had kind of a difficulty coming to terms with the fact that NATO, which was founded in the early days of the Cold War, still operated in the 21st century. They felt like NATO considered them the enemy. And then when the Baltics, which Russia considered in their sphere of influence, joined NATO, come on, how could anybody miss that? Putin's annexation of Crimea and his intervention in eastern Ukraine dominated much of last year for Obama and a good portion of this year, too. And while Romney has been warning about an increasingly aggressive Russia throughout his campaign, Obama, in a famous debate line, scoffed that the 1980s are calling to ask for their foreign policy back. I thought that was kind of smarmy and short-sighted back then. It was a jerk line, and Obama has been proven wrong on that as well. while the Obama administration ardently refuses to acknowledge that this could be a new Cold War, when Russian aircraft buzzed a U.S. ship in October, White House spokesman Josh Earnest downplayed the incident by saying nothing serious escalated because, well, both militaries were operating in international space. Wow, how brave of you, Josh. Meanwhile, if you Google Cold War II and Google News, everyone from Al Jazeera to the Christian Science Monitor to the Kansas City Business Journal is calling it exactly that, Cold War 2.0.
So what about Iraq?
Well, I'd say that was kind of obvious too. Look, we went in there and toppled a dictator. We left a power vacuum. As unpalatable as Saddam Hussein was, leaving a big black hole in the middle of that nation was bound to attract all kinds of even more unsavory characters. Is it any wonder that the Islamic State so quickly stepped in? And given the fundamentalist Islamist's prior record, I have to wonder how Obama could have ever referred to them as the JV team. They may not have air assets, they may not have technologically advanced weapons, but they use what they have very cunningly and effectively. Everything from social media to conventional weapons. They're terrorists. So their ultimate goal is to cause terror. And they've been doing that quite well. Notice what's been happening after the France attacks. Now, back then, Obama scoffed at Romney's claim that the U.S. should have maintained a long-term troop presence in Iraq. 2 years later, Obama ordered thousands of troops back there to prevent the country's collapse.
So would this help Romney if he actually did decide at the last minute to run for president again?
Well, I think in a way it could, because it would give him some foreign policy street cred, so to speak. And against Hillary Clinton, who tried to give Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov a reset button that actually meant overload, yeah, it would probably help a lot. That said, Hillary has always been a bit of a foreign policy hawk. She voted to authorize the Iraq War, and nowadays, she sounds much more hawkish on anything from Iran to deploying additional U.S. forces to the Persian Gulf. So I'm not sure how far predicting what should have been obvious to any casual observer would actually push Romney. So no, Romney's not a prophet. He's an intelligent guy who apparently has been paying attention to what is going on in the world a lot closer than our current president has.
I'm not much of a Romney guy myself, though I will admit, a see-I-told-you-so presidential campaign would kind of amuse me.
Yeah, it would be funny. And, you know, I can see how Republicans are now kind of crowing about it. But at the same time, this was an obvious thing. I mean, anybody who's been paying any modicum of attention would pretty much know this.
All right, Nikki. It was good to talk with you. See you again next week.
You bet. Take care.
Nikki blogs at thelibertyzone.com.
Plugs of the week.
Yes, we have several. So, Sean, you know, I drive a rather, vintage vehicle.
You have a project.
I have a vintage vehicle.
You have a project.
I drive it every day.
Yes. You have an excuse.
Yes. So, one of the things that, and we're talking about my 1998 Jeep Cherokee. So one of the things about it is they had a police package, and also they had the same kind of part in Europe, but there was a dashboard part that allowed you to have four switches instead of two that came with the standard Cherokee.
Four switches?
Like little fog light switches. So the standard Cherokee came with two, one for the defroster and one for the rear window wiper. And they're just like this little panel kind of down on the bottom of the dash right in front of the gear shift. Like I said, the standard one came with two, and if you had fog lights, it had three holes for switches. And then if you had the police package, or if you had a European model that had rear fog lights, you had four switches in this panel. And so a lot of guys, there's a mod that you can do to have the extended idle that the police package had, which basically you ground a wire, and then when you're in park or neutral, your idle goes from like 800 RPMs to 1200 RPMs. And it's useful for some off-road stuff. You can't find the four switch panels anymore. The last time one was on eBay was about a year ago, and it sold for $250. Back when I had my first Cherokee, you could get these things for like $30, right? But now they're really rare. So We're just talking on the on some of the forums, and I was like, hey, I went to school for engineering. I know how to work some AutoCAD, sort of, maybe. I'm just going to design one. Okay, great. I don't have a 3D printer. Like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with that? So 3D printers are like $800 if you get the one that you have to like put together yourself, and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Or like $2,500 for like a good one, but actually it wouldn't be the right size for me. It wouldn't be able to print as big as I need to. So there's a couple of services that will print your stuff for you and send it to you. Now, the one that I've been using is called makexyz.com. Here's the thing. A bunch of the guys that actually bought the little $800 hobbyist printers and then put them together, they like bid for jobs. It's really cool. So like, I put my thing out there, my design out there, and then it just like sends it over to whoever's next in the queue, and they print it up on their little hobbyist thing, and then they put it in a box and send it to me. It's like $18 to get my part printed as a prototype. And it's good that it's cheap because I keep messing up part of the switch port thing, but I won't really get into that. Now, those are good for like the prototypes, but Shapeways.com, they have $150,000 Stratasys printer. Okay. This thing is really nice. It's like what Magpul uses to make their prototypes.
Right. So you're saying that once you've got it down and you're like, this is the what I really want, I can say, all right, I've got this. Who wants one?
Exactly.
We're going to make 20.
And Shapeways will also actually let me put up a store, right? Kind of like an Etsy store or an eBay store or whatever, right? I can just put up there and I can say, this is my design. This is how much you have to pay, and Shapeways will ship you one. And then they cut me a check and they send you the part.
That's not a bad deal.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. But my prototypes for them are significantly more expensive, which reflects the difference between an $800 printer and a $150,000 printer. But I'm almost ready to send a prototype to Shapeways.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's actually really neat. When you put this down in the show notes, I'm like, what the heck? Okay, whoop-de-doo. And honestly, four whole switch panels for your Jeep.
Yeah, that sounds kind of lame, right?
Deal. Who cares? Yeah. Yeah, you know, the piece of junk for your project that has wheels that you drive to work.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, whatever. Oh, hey, now, you know what? Manufacturing stuff?
Uh-huh.
That's freaking cool. It's like anything else. You know, if you're not interested in the particular hobby, what do you care, right?
Right.
But the fact that there exists something, well, somebody may not be interested specifically in Jeep Cherokees, but maybe they're interested in something else where they need to manufacture it, and you can scale something just the same exact way you did, and now they're going, oh, wait a second.
Mm-hmm. So I have been also thinking about designing a like a phone mount for a rifle, because I got that Windows 10 phone for the Joe Huffman app that he wrote for long distance shooting.
Yeah, you were telling me about that.
Right. So now I can 3D print a mount for that particular phone to go on my particular rifle and print it up, and it's pretty cheap. I don't have to worry about setting up the printer and making sure that the filament is right and keeping all that. I don't have to worry about all that.
There are also a lot of situations where it'd be easier to 3D print something to get the right shape before you take it and carve it out of a piece of metal with a CNC machine.
Correct.
And having it done that way, it's you have all the coordinates. It'd be fairly easy to turn it into a CNC program for a machine, you know, for a CNC machine to make it out of metal, and be a lot cheaper to print it in plastic.
Oh yeah.
Than to do several iterations in a CNC machine out of metal.
Right. Assuming you even have somewhere to get a CNC machine.
Oh
right?
Well.
I mean,
there's got to be hundreds of places where you could get a job. I mean, there's literally thousands of places where you can get a CNC job done if you just know to ask. I mean, I'm in CNC job shops all the time. There's plenty of places. But you're not just going to wander in and say, I need this, and right? And give them some vague job, because that's just not how that works. But if it's $18 for a part that you've sketched in your computer, and it's a piece of crap, but you can take some measurements and try again half a dozen times at $18 a pop in plastic, that's not a that's Even if you do it 10 times, you're out how much?
Exactly.
And what's your ship time?
It depends on who actually ships and what the post office does, but it's usually 3 or 4 days.
So if you did 10 different iterations of this at $18 a piece, and you're doing it at night, you're talking, you can do this in a month, 2 months.
Yeah.
It's just something you do at night. If you can't do it in 10 times, you probably aren't very good at it.
Yeah. So I'm on my fourth, I think, is one. My fourth prototype was supposed to show up today, but apparently it didn't get shipped out until like Tuesday. And it's today is Thursday, so I won't get it until Friday or Saturday.
Okay.
That's still going to be quicker than me trying to figure out how to work a 3D printer.
Right. So you get a couple iterations of that. You think you've got it exact the way you want it. You take it down to, you take that, take it to Shapeways. Shapeways does it. Boom, you've got it. Assuming that that is exactly what you want, and now you wanted it in metal, you could start finding yourself in a job shop, assuming that the particular job you had it, you needed a CNC metal one.
Fun fact, Shapeways will do laser sintering, which means they will do metal.
Okay, if you wanted it done that way, but...
It's very expensive.
Oh, I imagine it would
be. It's very expensive.
But actually taking a chunk of metal and having it CNC'd, right. Not really that expensive.
The other thing is, you don't actually have to design the part. You just need the STL file. And places like Thingiverse and, you know, stuff like that, you can download the files. So if you find something, like, for example, a couple of months ago, Uncle had on his website, hey, look, there are these little scope throw lever things, you know, for rapid changing of your magnification on your scope.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're like $50, right? Or you can 3D print one for like, you know, $3.
Mm-hmm.
So you could take that file and you could upload it to Make XYZ and then they would print it out. I think they probably have a minimum charge. I don't know how much it would be, but it wouldn't be the $50 for one that you know, bought from whoever.
Yep. Sounds like really the buy-in on that is your comfort level.
Oh, yeah.
So once you're used to the process and how it works, and you get a level of comfort with how things are done, then you get, you know, it's like anything else. It's like with a barber. Once you're comfortable going into that particular barber shop and telling them what you want, then you're okay going in there. But until you're comfortable and you know, oh, you know, do I trust this guy with my hair?
Right.
Same situation. The other plug of the week this week is kind of like last night, the power went out again. And you know how I knew the power went out? It suddenly was really kind of dark and difficult to type on my keyboard. And this beeping sound sort of leaked around my earmuffs, you know, my headset. Because I wear these really big professional grade headphones that I got for the podcast. And I heard this persistent beeping noise. And I pulled my headphones off and it was my uninterruptible power supply telling me that the battery was running. And I looked around and the only light in the house was the big monitor for my computer.
Now you got this a couple of months ago and we did talk about it.
Oh yeah,
but
this
was like the first real like test of it.
It was the first time that I had been on the computer myself for a length of time. My wife had been on the computer when the power went out. I don't think I was home at the time. She actually ran the thing until it just was out of power. I think I was on a business trip. I was actually away from the house for like the whole week and she was plugged into it. I think I was actually on the phone with her. I was talking to her on the phone. She's like, yeah, the power's out. And she had her computer plugged into it and, you know, my monitors and she's plugged into the system so that she was using my monitor with her computer, that thing. So yeah, I'm sitting here. I can run both my monitors. I can run both of my laptops. Both of my laptops are plugged, strangely enough, into the uninterruptible power supply. So I don't actually use the laptop batteries. It's kind of weird, but that's the way I've got it. And with it all set up the way I do, I've got about an hour's worth of power on this UPS. Also, the audio gear. So technically, I could continue to record the podcast if the power went out for about an hour. The problem is that we would get the fan noise of the UPS. So really all we would get is I'd say, oh, we're going to have to stop recording until the power comes back on because all we would get is this background fan howl.
Right.
I continued to surf the internet. Oh yeah. The modem and the Wi-Fi and router are all on the UPS as well. So, you know, when the power drops and your Wi-Fi drops and your modem drops because right. the power drops out.
Right.
And your wife goes, well, I'm in the internet because her laptop didn't cut out because the power dropped. But she has no internet, so she may as well not have a computer. Yeah, that doesn't happen. So, you know, all the power's out, but we're still playing on our computers. Yeah, about an hour later, I'm like, you know, it's kind of late. I think I'm going to bed now. So I turned off the computers, and I turned off the audio gear, and I turned off everything except for the modem and the Wi-Fi. And I looked down, and it has a little digital readout, said 25 minutes, because when it had like 12 minutes left when I finally shut down. And it bounced up to 25 minutes because, of course, I dropped all the load off of it. 25 minutes when I went to bed and I woke up in the morning. The modem was still running. The router was still running. But I guess when the power came back on, it tripped the Wi-Fi off somehow. So I just reset the Wi-Fi and everything was good to go. So in the show notes, I have a link to the APC backups. It's a Backups Pro 1300. That's the one I'm using. That, like I said, with both of my laptops and both of my flat panels will give me about an hour. And that one's $150. They have a 700. Mine's a 1300. They have a 700. So that would probably give me about half an hour. That might be big enough. That's about a $95 unit. And they have one that's a 1500. And they have a 1000. So get which one you think will work for you. But let me tell you, when you get a power dip, spikes and weird stuff, and the power just doing weird things, and it drops things out and makes your Wi-Fi drop out, it's really freaking annoying. You get one of these things and that stuff stops. Just doesn't happen. Your lights flicker, your computer just sails right on. Fun with headlines.
1/3 of Americans would be fine with the military taking over.
Taking over what?
America.
I've been in the military. I wouldn't want them to take over America.
Yeah.
I mean, are they going to do all the sweeping and painting rocks and stuff? Because, I mean, that was what we were good at.
Well.
And blowing stuff up, too. But
yeah, so I don't really know. So this came from Yahoo News, so it wasn't...
Oh, that bastion of journalistic integrity.
Yeah, apparently they pulled it off of a site called Complex and then put it on their front page. That's how I found it.
I think you're going to have to read this to me. How's this go?
Keep in mind, this is ostensibly a news site. Blame the 2016 Republican presidential candidates, cough, Donald Trump, cough.
It says that.
It says that. Or the recent stock market meltdown, or Americans' general conviction that the country is going
to
hell.
Wait, the recent stock market meltdown? The stock market melted down? When did this happen?
This is from September of 2015. I don't really recall a stock market meltdown in September, but, you know, maybe stocks slid for 100 points or so a couple of days. I don't know.
Okay.
But a recent poll showed that 1/3 of U.S. citizens aren't satisfied with their government. In fact, 30% would support a military takeover, The Guardian reports.
Okay, so The Guardian is reporting that 30% of people in this scientific poll that was administered by what scientific polling agency?
The numbers come from a YouGov survey which polled 1,000 people online. The exact question was, is there any situation in which you could imagine yourself supporting the U.S. military taking over the powers of the federal government? Well, I gotta tell you, in a zombie apocalypse, yeah, probably. That's any.
I'm racking my brain here. And even I, trust me here when I tell you that I am one of those people that is civilian control of the military is the bedrock of American government. It's like the most important thing there is to know about military in the United States. The civilians are in charge of the military, not the other way around. Even I can see that there are times where the military is just going to be in charge of some things. Until the civilian government can be at least sort of reconstituted to say, all right, now we're in charge. And see, the headline doesn't even say what the question says.
Right.
Some circumstance where the military... Say that again? Read the question again?
Is there any situation in which you could imagine yourself supporting the U.S. military taking over the powers of the federal government?
Any situation where you can imagine, not do you support the military taking over the government? But can you imagine a circumstance that may occur, not even may occur, that could possibly occur if, you know, a meteor struck?
Right. Nuclear weapon in D.C. during the State of the Union address.
I don't even know what to make of that. That's just, Americans would be fine with the military taking over.
Yeah, not
even
really.
Remotely what was, no.
Right.
Well, Barron is still on assignment. Not sure when he's coming back. The J Block. Well, while I was recording Weird this week, Weird says, hey, Sean, you know, for the J Block this week, you should talk about how the podcast is made. Pull back the curtain a little bit. Tell the people how the podcast is made, because it's actually kind of interesting to me. I said, well, I guess, you know, Weird, if it's interesting to you, maybe other people care. Not sure why, but hey, what the heck, right?
There's a whole podcast on podcasting.
Is it for anybody other than I want to start a podcast? This is how you do it?
Not really.
No. How is this podcast made? Well, there's multiple sections to the podcast. So the podcast starts Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, somewhere in there. Sometimes Sunday, Nikki and I get together and we record Nikki's segment. So Nikki writes up her section, and usually she scripts it out pretty well. She writes down what she wants to say, and she posts it on the show notes for the show. Usually she just writes down what she wants me to say. We meet up on Skype on Sunday, and we still record our own audio separately, her side and my side. She records locally, and I record both sides, her side and my side, with the Zoom H6 that I purchased, 30 episodes ago. I take that, I edit it, and I save that segment. When Barron is available, when he was recording with us, Barron was usually Monday. Weird is Tuesday. If we have a special guest, I try to shoot for Wednesday on the special guest. Aaron is Thursday, usually in the afternoon. Friday, we record the main show. I have this really cool, it's like a soundboard. I think the only person who's actually seen the soundboard, the only person who's physically been present at the, as the sausage was made, as Weird put it, is Weird. He actually was here in the URS studios, which is, my house. It's this thing called Soundbite. It's I think it's technically called a carousel machine. It's a computer program called Soundbite. And it's a series of like computer buttons on your screen. And if you push the button with your, you know, mouse, it plays a sound, you know, a wave file or whatever out of the computer. And what I do is I take each of these wave files. In this case, it's each of the pre-recorded segments. So I've recorded for today's show, I've got the Blue Collar Prepping, I've got Foreign Policy for Grownups, and later in the show, I've got Weird's segment, the anti-gun nuttery segment, and I've also got the mid-roll of the Law of Self-Defense promo that I will play right after this J-Block. And then when we get to that segment, I will play them, you know, so Adam and I will talk, we'll get to the segment, I will play that segment, we'll listen to it, if there's any commentary to be had on it, we'll talk about it. And that's how Adam hears it for the first time. So Adam doesn't actually hear any of these segments before the segment plays while we're recording it.
And I used to. We used to do that. I would have to listen to it like at work or in the car. And, you know, sometimes I would be actually listening to it. Sometimes it would just be playing. But now we get kind of better reactions because I don't have to go, oh, right, I was supposed to remember to talk about such and such.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes I'd have to like type you little notes or something.
Right.
And sometimes I wouldn't. And sometimes you had no idea what the heck it was. It's not very helpful sometimes. This is so much better. And also, with Weird's audio fisks really didn't start until we got this carousel machine. There was a couple before that, but I was playing the audio off a different computer and he was listening to the audio over my microphone, over Skype, and it was really crappy. And now I'm playing them with the carousel machine and he's hearing them and respond, you know, and he'll talk back and forth. And the quality of that, I mean, it's gone way up. It's a really neat system. It works very, very well. I love it. It was like $40 for me to buy it. It's been worth every single penny I paid for it. Really, really good. And then what I end up doing is I end up, after I'm done with Adam here recording, Adam will, he's recorded his audio on his side, and he will upload that to Google Drive. I'll download it. I will take all of my recording, which I'll end up with three tracks. I'll end up with a track of me. I'll end up with a track of the computer audio, which is all the stuff that I played out of the carousel machine. I will end up with a track of Adam, and I'll download that to my computer from the Zoom. I'll get his track. I'll match it to the track that I've recorded myself, and then I will delete my track and use his track. I'll process that, and then I will sit down usually Saturday morning, and I'll spend Saturday morning for about 3 hours editing this podcast as close as I can down to about an hour. And I try to stick to less than an hour and 5 minutes. That's my goal, is to get it less than an hour and 5 minutes. If it's more than an hour and 5 minutes, that means I'm sorry, that was as close to an hour and 5 minutes as I could get. Ideally, I want it to be an hour. If it's more than an hour, it means I couldn't get it down to an hour. But if it's more than an hour and 5 minutes, that meant, I mean, like, I really tried. I'm sorry. And if it's less than an hour, it means, well, it was really less than an hour, because I don't actually, it actually really kind of bothers me that I didn't give it a full hour. It's like, it actually really bothers me. It's like, it's not a full hour. I feel like I just didn't give you like your full hour.
They're not getting enough for their money.
Right. You know, you just, you paid for your hour here. You know, you signed up for an hour. You didn't get an hour. I don't know why. It just kind of bothers me. But it's actually quite a bit of editing to do that. But the editing part isn't a closed door activity. You know, I can open the door. It's the pre-show and the recording part where I've got the door closed and I'm like locked in a room that my wife is bothered by, because that's when I'm out of contact and she's like, you know, excluded. So I try to minimize that. And that's part of this new scheduling thing where everybody's got a day, everybody's got a time. That's a fairly recent occurrence where I'm trying to force that on everybody, is more of a, my wife knows that. And that way I'm minimizing the amount of time that I'm taking away from my wife, which is, you know, she is kind of important to me. It's almost 9 years I've been married to her. I really, you know, I need to respect that. That's how the podcast is put together. It's a little more complicated than most of your general, you know, a couple guys get together and talk into some microphones. But I like doing it this way because it means I have to come up with less. And it also means that I get more different and interesting things. You wouldn't believe the weird things that just randomly appear. You know, Aaron talks about things that I would never, ever in a million years come up with on my own. I'm like, where did this come from? That's interesting. And I wouldn't even have met Nikki if it hadn't been for talking to Aaron about, I need somebody else. And I got, you know, and of course I knew weird from, you know, weird. I think everybody knows weird.
Yeah, everybody does know weird.
The podcast bicycle, you know? But it's worked out really well. And I'm really glad. I mean, it does mean a lot of editing for me. But it's a really cool system, and I'm just glad it worked out this way. So that's pretty much how it works. That's the, you know, there's your peek behind the curtain. It's a lot of fun, a lot of work, but a lot of fun. And now a word from our sponsor. You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put two in the 10 ring. But have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say. What the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey. Or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state. And make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off. This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the donate or the subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount, or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us. And I'd like to thank the person who donated to us this last week. It was a great help and very timely. For some reason, the local news station here in Raleigh decided to run a hit piece on National Firearms Act trusts, which seems a rather esoteric thing for them to discuss on the nightly local news. The print guys have all taken their whack at this dog's breakfast of a non-story, and now it's Weird's turn to do one of his patented weird audio fisks in This Week in Anti-Gun Nuttery. Well, hey Weird, what do you got for us this week?
So what should be a Fun with Headlines segment also fits into This Week with Anti-Gun Nuttery. Let's dive right in.
High-powered, highly regulated weapons. Tonight, WRAL investigates a legal way for people to own the weapons without going through the mandatory ATF screening.
Whoa! I can't wait to hear what this report details. Sidestepping ATF screening and for high-powered weapons that are heavily regulated? Will somebody think of the children? Lock up your daughters, citizens!
Short barrel rifles and suppressors known as silencers. These are weapons covered under the National Firearms Act.
To buy them, the process is much more thorough than purchasing most other guns. Sheriffs are part of that process, although some are reluctant to grant approval. There's a legal way to avoid those checks and balances, and WRAL's Cullen Browder is here with a growing trend in the gun community. Cullen?
Well, David and Deborah, it's called a gun trust, and quite frankly, there's even confusion among gun owners about how it all works. The trust is almost like a will for firearms to pass on between generations. It requires just one person to go through the rigorous application process. Anyone else in that trust can avoid that scrutiny.
So, wait, this is all about suppressors, short-barreled rifles, and shotguns? But suppressors are really accessories more than anything else, and one could argue that a shorter barrel on shotguns and rifles makes them less powerful. Okay, so let's get down to brass tacks on this NFA trust issue. It certainly is a little bit like a will, because it does allow transfer of one or many NFA firearms or suppressors without additional ATF paperwork, waiting periods, or tax stamps after the death of somebody in the trust. But it's more than that. It can allow families or groups of people to access and use NFA items like any other firearm in your home. Also, it gets rid of that legal gray area if, say, you own an NFA item and you go to work while your wife is at home and she knows the combination to the gun safe. We'll get into another reason to have a trust in a bit.
He bought the gun and the suppressor in Harnett County because the sheriff there signed off on it. Well, now he lives in Wake County.
So any future applications I have as of right now will have to be through a gun trust because Donnie Harrison will not sign off on my NFA applications.
Wait, what? In the news report, they're talking about this SBR conversion of an FNPS 90. So he owns a registered NFA item, like legally. And in the new county, he still owns it legally, and he can own all sorts of other non-NFA items. But the sheriff won't sign off on any new NFA applications. This is the problem with law enforcement discretionary laws. It's always trumpeted as police using their judgment on who gets and doesn't get a gun. But that's never how it plays out. When I walked into the police station in Medford, Massachusetts, I was told I'd be denied a Massachusetts carry permit by the chief's secretary. She wasn't the chief law enforcement officer. She wasn't even a cop. As far as I remember, she didn't even ask for my name. Nope. May issue always translates to the real world as shall issue or no issue. Either the issuing officer will sign off on it, given that you have no disqualifiers, or they won't sign off on it no matter who you are or what you want. It's a terrible system.
A gun trust is a legal avenue gaining popularity for those who want short barrel rifles and suppressors, but can't get a local sheriff's authorization.
Ah, so now we're starting to see why these are so popular. People with nothing in their way to enjoying some NFA firearms, but some stodgy killjoy cop who simply doesn't think law-abiding citizens should enjoy such things, well, they can sidestep this process with an NFA trust. They interview a lawyer who works with trusts, but they gave his interview such a hatchet job it really wouldn't be fair to play it.
Simply put, the trust is a legal arrangement that allows guns to be passed down to beneficiaries without court dispute. At the same time, anyone designated by the trust can possess NFA-regulated firearms. The head of the trust must pass a criminal background check, submit extensive paperwork, and $200 to Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and wait about 6 months for a decision. Approval opens the door for anyone else named in the trust to own the guns, without the same scrutiny.
So this is the issue this whole report is about. The head of the trust is the person to go through the ATF paperwork and checks, but they can add whoever they want. Except they can only add people under the legal age to possess NFA items as a beneficiary, and you can't legally add a prohibited person since they can't possess any firearms, NFA or not. Still, the report is technically true. I could add Creepy Uncle Jailbird to my NFA trust. But not only would that be illegal for Uncle Creepy to handle firearms, but I'd be putting my name in a legal document saying I illegally transferred the item to them. Let's be clear, this isn't like people who in the privacy of their own home are putting their SIG arm brace equipped pistol to their shoulder, or even letting your buddy who you didn't know got busted in college for possession shoot your Glock at a sandpit. This is putting the commission of a federal felony on a legal document for everybody to see.
Wake County Sheriff Donnie Harrison, a staunch Second Amendment supporter, leans on his legal team to advise him about trusts. Still, he's not entirely sold.
I love this. They interviewed a guy who collects NFA items, a lawyer who specializes in NFA trusts, and we'll later hear from a gun shop owner who sells NFA items. But the one person who gets the staunch Second Amendment supporter is the guy who's telling lawful citizens they can't own certain guns because he doesn't like them. Also, you are entirely sold now, Sheriff, because as of August 7th of this year, chief law enforcement officers in North Carolina are no longer allowed to refuse their signatures on NFA applications. They can deny an application due to a prohibited status, or they can sign the form and give the ATF their blessing. Again, police simply refusing to issue all residents in their jurisdiction access to NFA items was such a problem that North Carolina passed a law to keep this from happening.
Wake County Sheriff Donnie Harrison still has reservations about trust because they bypass his judgment on gun buyers.
I think at some point in time it's going to be tested. I don't know who's going to test it.
Except there is zero evidence that Sheriff Harrison used any discretion. He even refused to sign off on his own deputies who wanted to own NFA items. All right, so in the next audio clip, they go down to a local gun store. Hey, Sean, do you recognize this place?
Yeah, that's the Fuquay Golden Gun. It's probably the biggest gun store in Wake County. It's a really good gun store.
All right, so they go into this store, and they ask the owner about ARs. The shop owner lays out an AR pistol with a short barrel and no stock, a full-sized AR with a 16-inch barrel, and an AR that is legally a short-barreled rifle because it has a short barrel like the pistol, but a stock like the full-sized AR.
You can legally, if you've got a clean background and can pass a background check, you can purchase an AR-15 pistol. And you can purchase a full-size AR-15, but you cannot purchase this without jumping through a whole bunch of hoops with the ATF and getting in Wake County and getting a gun trust set up.
Does that make sense to you?
Zero sense. That makes absolutely no sense at all.
So here's the meat of the issue. On the entirety of the NFA list, really the only class of firearm that has a functional difference from non-NFA items is full auto. And that is a topic for another day. You can buy an AR-15 rifle with a long barrel and a shoulder stock. You can buy an AR pistol with a short barrel and just the bare buffer tube hanging off the back. And either is a non-NFA item. And you can even own both of them at the same time and lock them in the same safe. Just don't take them apart and swap the pistol upper onto the rifle lower without getting a permission slip from the ATF. Now, you can't buy a Mossberg 500 pistol without playing NFA games. But you can buy a Taurus Judge revolver in 410 for a 5-shot shotgun you can fit in a coat pocket. But God forbid you cut down the barrel of your single-shot 410 to 16 inches. And let's not even get into how the same technology that is required on my car is banned on my gun without a tax stamp. And totally banned here in Massachusetts. Yep, an accessory that protects against hearing loss and disturbing the peace is an NFA item. Really, in the end, this last clip is the most important. We can talk about trusts and if they're good or bad, but let's face it, they're great. Or if a law enforcement officer should be able to deny people for no justifiable reason besides political leanings. But let's face it, that's crap. But the root of all of this is we shouldn't be bothering with regulating NFA items. It makes no sense and poses no issue with society.
All right, Weird. It was good talking with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com.
Stuff that grinds my gears. NRA, why are you so slow? Did you see that stupid tweet by some black actor named Wendell something or other?
I did, in fact, but only because I follow you on Twitter and happened to be on Twitter when you replied to him.
Oh, so racially sensitive Wendell tells us, if every black male 18 to 35 applied for a conceal and carry permit and then joined the NRA in one day, there would be gun control laws in a second. Now let's ignore the fact that in almost all states you have to be at least 21 to apply for what I am almost certain is almost never officially referred to anywhere as a conceal and carry permit. Let's also ignore the fact that in most places you can't apply for one in one day. You probably got to get training in most places. Does this moron really think that the average gun owner gives a damn about his black neighbor owning or carrying guns? What racist stew does he marinate himself in every day? I don't let that get me down. Just because you're a famous, well, sort of semi-famous actor, doesn't mean you've got any sense whatsoever. No, what really pisses me off is the NRA. When this went viral on Facebook among the sort of lily-white professional bloggers masquerading as journos, who are more scared of 18 to 35-year-old black men than they are of my AR-15, the people who really made me mad were the people running the NRA. If I was running the NRA, I would have gone wall-to-wall counter-battery fire. I'd have carpet-bombed social media with ads featuring Corleone Noir. Sign up for the NRA right now. If you're a black man, 18 to 35, or a woman, or even if you're older than 35, and you use discount code Wendell, we'll give you $10 off your first year's membership with the NRA. But wait, there's more! Act now and we'll throw in personalized assistance in getting your state's concealed handgun permit. Want to carry a handgun in your state? Legally? Want to join the ranks of the good guys with guns? We want to help. Those racist cops in Alabama refused to issue Martin Luther King Jr. a concealed handgun permit. But in most states today, thanks to the NRA, if you meet the legal requirements, the cops can't say no to you. Go to NRA.org and use discount code Wendell right now, and we'll see you at the NRA annual meeting in Louisville, Kentucky. And at Louisville's annual meeting, I'd make damn sure to make a big deal out of welcoming our new Wendell members with clapping and cheering. Send our new members home after a weekend with their long-lost cousins to tell their other friends how friendly and welcoming those NRA folks were. I'm white. Adam's damn near translucent.
Only because I work in an office.
There's a statistical probability that most of you listening to this podcast are similarly color deficient. That's because most people in America are white. 72.4% of Americans are of European descent. This means that most gun owners, like most other non-specifically chosen groups in this country, are going to be mostly white. That doesn't mean we're afraid of our black neighbors, not even when they own guns. Because let's face it, we know our black neighbors. They're not strangers. We want them to have guns. Big guns. Because when the night soil hits the rotating air mover, that dark-skinned neighbor over the back fence is going to be the guy holding your rear perimeter, and you hope like hell he's got the firepower to handle his sector of fire. But does the NRA recognize this chance as it presents itself? Nope. They just sit there, eyes glazed, and watch this golden opportunity pass right on by. Adam, what do you got this week?
Social media in general, and comments on news articles in particular.
You know that a lot of those news comments come out of boiler rooms, right?
That doesn't surprise me at all. I had a very long, drawn out over like 4 days argument with somebody. This is why I'm not on Facebook anymore and why I generally try not to be on these kind of social media things, because someone on the internet is wrong. Basically, I was using the official medical definition from the Medical Professional Society about something, and this guy was saying that it was something else and how I was stupid for using that term. So, right? So here's my problem, right? So I work in an office. I have my master's. My wife has her master's. I don't deal with the general public very much.
You forget how stupid some people really are.
Except for on these news comments. And I'm like, it's very hard for me to understand that people are that f***ing stupid. Anyway.
There's a meme that you will not have seen not being on Facebook. It's a picture of Santa, and it's like, I've seen what you post on Facebook, and you're all getting a dictionary for Christmas.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. Oh, yeah. Kind of at the very end of that argument, the guy said, well, you're the one that called it a mental illness. I was like, oh, no. It was like, I see what your problem is now. You don't understand basic English. I called it a mental disorder because it's a mental disorder. That's what it is. It's not a mental illness. No one called it a mental illness. I see now why you're so upset. It's okay. Knowing this, I now know how to treat you. I will use smaller words and try to link to Wikipedia definitions for you. And then he comes back, he's like, oh, well, now you're backpedaling. Okay, now you need to look up that word too.
I see what the problem is. You're too stupid to read.
Yes. Like, oh my gosh.
Your intelligence is a microaggression.
It's my white privilege.
Well, it's not necessarily. I mean, there's intelligent people that aren't white.
Yeah, but I'm also white, so everything is white privilege.
Oh, well, okay. If it must be.
If I don't have cancer, it's because of my white privilege. Haven't you been paying attention?
I don't know. I can't keep up with how many privileges okay. You have.
It's just the one.
Oh. What about your male privilege?
Well, they're the same.
And your cis privilege?
Maybe.
And your hetero privilege?
Oh, that's gone.
You're not hetero?
No, the privilege part.
Oh. Okay. Well, that's our show for the week.
Thanks again to Rob Allen for our music.
And Firearms Policy Coalition for their support.
And thank you for listening to the Gunblog Variety Cast.
Constructive criticism can be sent to Sean at SeanSorrentino.com.
And hate mail to WizardPC at GunsCarsTech.com.
Like and share us on Facebook.
If you have Facebook.
And if you receive this podcast through iTunes, make sure to leave us a glowing 5-star review.
Show notes can be found at GunblogVarietyCast.com/episode 68.
This is a URS production.